You called about the noises in your walls, right?
Oh, no, 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 not me.
You sure about that?
Hey there, little guy.
Charlotte!
I need you to watch Liam.
Why?
Because he's 6 months old and he eats paper.
Every time I try and connect, she takes two steps back.
Night, Ethan. You hungry?
Cool. We're gonna call you Sting.
Hi, Eric. Could a spider grow twice as big in a couple of hours?
No, that is a physiological impossibility. Sweet Jesus, what the hell happened to it?
Rats.
I don't think a rat's gonna do that.
Spiders only know two things.
Ah! Oh!
Eat and kill.
What kind of spider are we talking about here?
A big one. Spider bite will paralyze its prey because it likes to feed on living flesh.
Dang!
We have to deal with this together.
What the?
Stink.
That's your spider!
Sting just was kind of the obvious choice. I will take the synopsis off of IMDb. After raising an unnervingly talented spider in secret, 12-year-old Charlotte must face the facts about her pet and fight for her family's survival when the once charming creature rapidly transforms into a giant flesh-eating monster. That's a long-winded way of saying it's a killer spider movie, folks. So if that's what you want, that's what the movie delivers. How well does it deliver it? We'll find out now. Venom, general thoughts on Sting.
All right. Well, I have a couple of points to make, a couple of caveats before I get into my actual general thoughts on Sting. The first, and I think most people who are regular listeners of any of my shows know this, I am an incredibly big fan of giant spider movies. Not just giant spider movies, but even regular-sized spider movies like, you know, Kingdom of the Spiders or Arachnophobia. But giant spider movies genuinely hold a special place in my heart. I get a very solid guilty pleasure thrill out of watching these, even the bad ones. So I do want to say that take that into consideration when you hear my review, because I'm not sure if my review is going to be the norm. So that's the first caveat. The second caveat, regular listeners of this show know that I watched this movie about 2 weeks before its actual release. I went to a mystery screener at AMC, and it turned out to be Sting. And I gave kind of some very, very preliminary thoughts on the movie, talking about how much fun I had with it, how much I enjoyed it. And again, this is coming from a giant spider movie fan. Now, in between my first watch and my second watch, which was just yesterday afternoon, I went ahead and watched some other favorite giant spider movies. And I think I may have done Sting a disservice by doing this, because I realize now, after watching movies like Eight-Legged Freaks and Itsy Bitsy and Arachnia and Lavalantula and Big Ass Spider, like I said, folks, I like giant spider movies. I watched about a half dozen of them this past weekend. I realize now that this movie, unfortunately, Sting, is a solid, if not slightly underwhelming, creature feature effort. And I feel like the biggest problem with this movie is that it has an identity crisis. This movie is not sure what it wants to be. It feels like there's two different movies going on when we're watching Sting. The first movie is this over-the-top giant spider creature feature where it's interacting with all these wacky neighbors and different kinds of personalities within the apartment building. And all of that stuff is fun. Like, I like all the characters in the movie. I love the spider, which we'll get to a little bit later. But that part of the film is all enjoyable. The problem is there's a second movie going on at the same time, which is a gripping family drama. And unfortunately, whenever the movie goes to the family drama aspects of it, the movie comes to a screeching halt. Like, literally, they'll have a fun scene where the spider is stalking and potentially killing, like, a family pet. So, you know, it kind of gets your juices going, and then bam, right back to the family drama, and it's like, what the fuck? And the funny thing is, I didn't notice this the first time I watched the film. Maybe because it had been long enough that I hadn't seen a giant spider movie, especially in theaters. We don't really get these in theaters that often. So when we got it and I watched it that first time, I was really excited about it. But then I realized that this movie is very disjointed. It's unbalanced in its storytelling. Take a movie like Eight-Legged Freaks. Eight-Legged Freaks embraces its silliness. It embraces its wackiness. So suspension of disbelief is right out the window with something like Eight-Legged Freaks, something like Big Ass Spider, Lavalantula, you know, a lot of those types of spider movies. Reality goes right out the window. So you can allow yourself to have some fun with it. It doesn't have to be serious, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Eight-Legged Freaks is so ridiculous that by the end of the movie, some of the sounds that the spiders were making actually sounded like words. Like, I thought the spiders were actually talking to each other, which I'm sure they're communicating in some way, shape, or form. But like I said, it just sounded almost like I could pick out words in the noises that the giant spiders were making. So bravo, Eight-Legged Freaks, for embracing your silliness. And then there's the opposite end of the spectrum, and that's something like Itsy Bitsy from 2017. Itsy Bitsy, once again, another giant spider movie. This one doesn't have any comedy in it whatsoever. It is a straight horror film, and this one does have a gripping family drama. But this one, for whatever it's worth, it doesn't bring the movie to a screeching halt, because it's not like there's quote-unquote fun kills in something like Itsy Bitsy. They're all gnarly, painful, fucked-up kills. So the tone of that film is serious throughout the entirety of the film. Whereas with Sting, the tone is all over the place. You'll be having, as I already mentioned, you'll be having fun in one scene, and then the very next scene, stepdad is getting into an argument with his wife or with his stepdaughter. And like I said, it just brings all, it sucks all the fun right out of the movie. If this movie could identify what it wanted to be, does it want to be Itsy Bitsy or does it want to be Eight-Legged Freaks? If it would have embraced one over the other, I could have respected it a lot more. Now, the other issue, one of the other major issues I have with this movie is the director. This director, Kaya Roche Turner, is the director of the Wormwood films. And for those of you who've been longtime listeners, you remember I love the first Wormwood movie. I absolutely adore it. It's such a refreshing, different take on the zombie genre that I embraced it instantly. And then the sequel came out, and if you remember, we actually did review that one on Fresh Cuts, and I wasn't very high on it because it felt like they added nothing to the film from the first one, from Road to the Dead to Apocalypse. And so this director is kind of hit or miss for me. And Sting, unfortunately, I would have liked to have seen him do something like he did with the first Wormwood movie, where he takes the giant spider genre and turns it on its ear, does something different and original. But ultimately, Sting is fairly derivative, you know? Spider emerges from its cocoon, it grows exponentially, it kills people until it is dispatched itself. I mean, it's such a formulaic, treatment for this film that it's hard to really praise it. I can praise the spider. I thought the spider was great. I can praise the performances for what they are. Despite me not being real high on the family drama in this film, it's not the worst family drama I've ever seen in a horror film. It's absolutely not the best family drama I've ever seen in a horror film either. Not every family-oriented horror film can be A Quiet Place or Hereditary. You know, sometimes they have to be... what was that movie last year that pissed me off? There's Something in the Barn, where the dynamic of that family just irked the shit out of me. Now, granted, that was a horror comedy, not really going for the drama. So, you know, it's a loose example. But, yeah, like I said, if Sting had a more solid identity, I would be down for it. But aside from all the family drama stuff, the spider looks great. I love Charlotte. I love her story. I love that she's a budding comic book artist, that she wants to be like her stepdad, who is a current comic book artist. All of that is all fine. It's done well. The performances are cool. Unfortunately, it is an R-rated film, but there's not really a lot of on-screen kills, unfortunately. We get one really cool on-screen attack early in the film, but then the rest of the movie, it's just people being dragged into duck work, people being, you know, webbed up to the walls, things like that. It's like it's not the goriest thing, which is another problem with a giant spider movie. I feel like giant spider movies, unless they're TV movies airing on Sci-Fi, they need to up the gore. I mean, we need that gore. I mean, that's part of the fun of a giant spider movie, is seeing somebody get their head ripped off, or, you know, a leg bitten off, or whatever the case may be. Or even watching someone actually get fed on. I'm noticing the giant spider movies definitely have an issue with showing the giant spider actually feeding on a person. Same thing with Itsy Bitsy. You know, the spider would catch the people, take it to a lair, and then eat them there. Same thing with Sting. We, you know, the spider doesn't actually attack to kill. He attacks to paralyze and then save them for food later. So despite the fact that we do see a couple of dry husks in the movie, we never actually see the spider feed, which is always kind of a pet peeve of mine. I want to see that fucker feed. I want to see him suck the juices out of a human until it's just a dry husk. So there's definitely a lot of elements of a quote-unquote fun giant spider movie that are missing from this one. Overall, I'm going to say if you're as big a fan of giant spider movies as I am, it's still worth a watch. I don't think it's necessarily vital to watch in the theater, other than the fact that, like I mentioned earlier, we almost never get giant spider movies in theaters. So, like me, if you are a big fan, take advantage and go see it. The movie is very good looking. It's a very well-made movie. It looks good. It's a nice combination of CGI and practical effects for the spider. As I said, we don't really get a lot of on-screen kills, but we get some after effects, you know, some bodies and whatnot after the spider has dealt with them, things like that. But it is a fairly tame giant spider movie, considering some of the ones that we've gotten over the last 10, 20, 25 years. So overall, I would say it's a solid movie, slightly underwhelming. I'm not going to say that it's vital viewing for the theater unless you are a gigantic giant spider fan like I am. So that's going to be my general thoughts on Sting. Solid but underwhelming.
All right. I will pass the mic to Don and Ellie. What's your thoughts on Sting?
I'm pretty much right there with Venom, although I probably like the spider action a little bit less, and I hate the family drama more than he does. But I am pretty much right there with him. I mean, come on, you guys know me and my taste for schlocky creature features. You guys know I'm all over stuff like this. And yeah, I do agree. I think there's a lot of fun to be had with the cheesy Sci-Fi Channel stuff. Although, yeah, I do agree that the lack of gore in the genre is kind of disquieting, or... And I really shouldn't use that word, but I mean, it's close enough. Yeah, there really needs to be like that, you know, balls out, you know, gore fest spider movie that we all need to, you know, just see like the, you know, sadness level of gore that, you know, a giant spider army just ripping people to pieces would be just, you know, that'd be so much fun. But, you know, I'll leave that for another day. But for Sting, yeah, it's okay. The spider scenes are absolutely the best part. I mean, the final half hour to this is, I mean, head and shoulders above anything else that we get in here. The spider problem, we get to see it, looks amazing. The, you know, cocoons look fantastic. I love the, you know, battle in the laundry room where the final battle takes place. you know, some great, you know, tactics that are used to try to, you know, fight it off. A little bit of gore here and there, but I mean, not completely enough. But man, my God, the family drama to this thing. I mean, the first of all, the daughter's an absolute cunt. And I hated her every second she was on screen. There's so many plot holes in what she's trying to do here. Can't say why, just because those are spoilers, and I'm really trying to, you know, keep myself from saying stuff. But yeah, she just irked me the wrong way. A lot of the family dynamics that go on here are just completely wrong-sided. I can't say that. That's a spoiler. It just drags. The first, you know, we get like one or two attacks, but it doesn't really become like a prominent part of the film until like nearly 50 minutes in. And I mean, you know, you get one or two bodies here and there, but nothing really major. But I mean, yeah, like 50 minutes in, and then like the spider finally becomes like a prominent part of the storyline. That's completely wrong. I mean, you really shouldn't need anything like that, even if you're trying to, you know, put up this kind of technical quality that. The apartment looks good. I like the atmosphere here. The spider's use of the ducts and trying to, you know, move around through the heating vents. I really like that. And it kind of, you know, plays up as a logical reason for, you know, why didn't anybody see this thing? You know, because it does take place all in the apartment. I mean, I think there's one scene out of the entire film that takes place outside of it, which, it does kind of, you know, allude to why didn't anybody discover this sooner, and then you realize, okay, well, it's because the thing's moving around in the heating ducts. Perfectly logical, perfectly reasonable. I can buy that. It, you know, adds some atmosphere to it. Really needed a couple of more characters, maybe one or two extra residents just to kind of, you know, add some body count. Maybe that would have given us a little bit more gore seeing them getting wiped out, but... Yeah, it's fun for what it is. If you're just going in to see the spider carnage, just stick to the final half of the film. That's pretty much where everything takes place. The first half to this is kind of maddening and excruciating. It takes a while to get going, and it doesn't really justify the payoffs, but the final half is fun for what it's fun for what it is. Not the greatest killer spider movie, and probably not even going to be the best killer spider movie this year, because Shudder is releasing one, I think, at the end of the month. Infested, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Infested, yeah, that one.
Yeah, it's that a Spanish film, so the Spanish title is Verminas, but the translation is Infected, yep.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was trying to remember. I knew it was a foreign film, but I couldn't remember if that was the translated title. So look for that to come to, you know, Fresh Cuts in a few weeks, because Spanish horror. But, I mean, I already know that as a fact. So, look for that one in a few weeks. So
a Spanish horror about a giant spider? Yeah, I think we'll do that.
So like I said, look for that one in a few weeks. But... first thing, not a high watch. I mean, if you're, you know, looking to fill out some creature features for your end of year list, I hate to say it, this is probably one of the better ones of the year so far. It's probably like my second or third favorite creature feature of the year. So, I mean, if you're looking for that particular part of the genre, I mean, you can do worse. But if you're, you know, maybe looking for just like an overall film, maybe wait till streaming, maybe not a, you know, theater watch, but just wait till streaming. We'll see how Infested is, but I don't know it, you know, I mean, I haven't seen any trailers, so I can't say to that, but you can do worse in the genre. You can definitely do better in the genre. So, take it for what it is, but yeah, not the greatest, but if you can stumble upon it for free, give it a shot. But other than that, I say that's your best bet. Just wait for it. But, at the risk of saying anything else, I'll leave it at that. So back to you, I guess, Mike.
There was one more thing I actually wanted to add about the pacing of the film. I mentioned how I didn't hate the family drama on the first watch. I forgot to mention that I genuinely did hate the family drama on the second watch, because you really notice how it takes you out of the fun. You know, like I said, a fun kill will happen, and then boom, dad and mom are arguing about something. So it really, really drags the whole movie down. I didn't notice it as much on first watch, but like I said, on second watch, especially watching all those other Spider movies that I watched in preparation for this one, you really notice how much the family stuff brings this movie down. So yeah, I'm right there with Don. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
All right. So for me, I'm kind of in line with you guys for the most part. I think something Venom brought up, the movie being derivative. Now, when I see a movie that's kind of going down the derivative road, that in itself isn't always necessarily a bad thing. But to me, if you're going to be derivative, you better like pack it on 100% and go over the top. This movie could have been derivative, but if it gave us like over the top kills, just crazy sequences with the spider, that would have been okay. And it, because this was my first time seeing it, I thought maybe they were setting that up, because we're in like a high rise apartment building. There's a setup for like, you know, all these people trapped in there with this killer spider, or just not knowing about it before it's too late and get killed. And I, when I got done with the movie, I had to go look at the at IMDb, because it actually is rated R. And I kept thinking back on it. I was like, other than maybe like a couple shots of like the aftermath of what a spider did to like a couple pets, I think, or one pet, I'm struggling to see why it even got an R rating, because like it wasn't that graphic. It wasn't like there was like tons of nudity, or, you know, there wasn't much to make it R.
The daughter swears a lot. The daughter swears a lot. The R rating, I think, is mostly for language.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to get a pass.
The daughter swore a lot.
It's just, yeah, I mean, that, I guess, is a justification. It's just kind of disappointing if that's, like, the reason, because if you're giving me a killer spider movie that's rated R, my first inclination is to be like, okay, cool, at least we're going to get, like, a lot of cool graphic deaths. But we just didn't get it. As far as, like, the basic setup, like, I was okay with it. I thought it was kind of cool. You know, obviously you take in this, like, you know, quote-unquote pet spider. Turns out, or of course, things don't go as planned. The spider gets free. It starts going on a rampage. So you kind of get like the, you know, a more or less setup you would expect to get, but then it just kind of like levels out from there and stays medium or even a little less than medium. I found the movie, like, it was an okay movie. Like, it's not bad. This is not the type of movie I would say, oh, this is not good. I would still say, hey, go see it. I mean, if anything, you probably want to watch a killer spider on the big screen, just because it's going to enhance the viewing experience, at least in my opinion. But I just think that it doesn't kind of deliver what you would expect in a rated R killer spider movie. And like Venom named off a handful of other ones he's seen, and out of all those ones that I've seen too, I would say I prefer all of them over this one. But, you know, and the family drama, I agree. I don't know. I would say maybe the family drama itself didn't bother me, but just how much it's in here, and the fact that, yeah, it's we get like these breaks in like the tension to like revisit and re-explore the family dynamics, and it's just like, no, the time for that was like set that up in the first act, and then we can revisit at the end, because, like, you know, obviously when someone – or you get the day saved by someone that there was previously hostility or strife with, of course we would expect, like, some reconciliation to happen. But this movie just does this weird things where it, like, keeps going back to it throughout the movie when it just doesn't need it. It's like once we get our spider in, like, I wouldn't even say the final stage, just once it starts growing and causing havoc – from that point on, it should be just a killer spider going on a rampage movie. And when it kind of sticks to that, it's entertaining. But I just think they take too many breaks from that throughout the running time. And it's not even that long of a running time. It's a straight, solid 90-minute movie. So I think this is like it's an okay movie that had the potential to be a lot better. And that's, like I think we've said it a lot of times, that's sometimes the most disappointing movies are the ones that where you see the potential for it to be really good and it turns out to be just okay. It's funny, I was a little worried that I was going to be way more down on it because I remember Venom, when you saw it at like the surprise screening, you seemed to like it, like a fair amount. So it looks like, yeah, with the second watch, you kind of are now more in line with what me and Don, we all seem to be somewhat on the same page about it. But yeah, I would say it's an okay movie. Just don't go in expecting too much. And like we kind of like figured out now, that R rating is going to be mostly because you have a kid cursing a lot. I didn't find much else about it that would require an R rating. So I'll keep it there for now. Back to you, Venom.
Yeah, I mean, one example of the family drama really bringing this movie down, there's this great scene where Charlotte brings the spider down to an animal expert that lives in the building. Technically, his expertise is more in fish, but he does know insects and arachnids as well. He ends up placing the spider in a glass tank. It ends up getting big. This isn't a spoiler, mind you. It's just a minor plot point. And then once the spider gets too big for the tank, it breaks out of the tank. It literally just smashes the glass tank. From that moment on, the movie should have been a balls-to-the-walls, spider taking out people defending themselves. Like, it should have been nothing but spider action. What's the very next scene after the fucking spider breaks out of the glass tank? It's the final scene of the family arguing and then the big catalyst event where, you know, the truth is told about a certain member of the family. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? You just showed me this giant spider get out of the tank. I could give two shits about the family drama. There is a 4-foot spider running around your building. That's what I paid to see. And they just bring it right down, you know, all the excitement, all the juices that are flowing because the spider's finally out of its tank. And nope, we're going to bring it down and show you the family arguing some more. And Mike has a valid point, too. I mean, this is a short runtime. This is exactly 90 minutes. At least 20 minutes of the runtime is spent on this family, and that's too much, just way, way too much. Like I said, unless you're doing an Itsy Bitsy style, and it's so weird that that movie's called Itsy Bitsy, but it's like a gritty, you know, family drama-oriented spider movie with a silly title, but this one has a cool title, and yeah, maybe the family drama didn't work so well, so don't go by the titles, I guess. Because I almost didn't watch Itsy Bitsy the year that came out, because I thought the title was so stupid, but then I watched it and I fucking loved it. It almost made my top 10.
If I remember right, I think it was given another name in the UK, and then it was renamed to Itsy Bitsy here in the US.
That might be, I mean, potentially, yeah. I don't remember necessarily.
Yeah, I don't either.
That could be the case.
Yeah, I
poster, think that was like the I remember seeing the Itsy Bitsy poster and thinking, God, that's so stupid. But since I love giant spider movies, I have to watch it. And obviously, I ended up loving it. So yeah, Itsy Bitsy is a high recommend for me if you haven't seen that one yet. Anyway, what else can we talk about with Sting? We've already talked about kind of the lack of kills, the lack of kind of set pieces, the kind of just derivative nature of the whole movie. Even the final, and no pun intended here, but the final sting of the movie is the most basic derivative final sting of any giant spider movie we've ever seen. Itsy Bitsy did it, Big Ass Spider did it, Arachnophobia did it, like every, and not that Arachnophobia is a giant spider movie, but it's a spider movie. And it seems like the final sting of a spider movie is always the fucking same, and I'm so sick of it. That's why I'm a little disappointed with this one. Because with this director practically, you know, redefining Australian zombie films with Wormwood, I really, really wish he would have done the same thing with Sting. Make, you know, really embrace the Aussiness of it, too. Because this movie is basically, it's all Americans in it, really. Even though it's an Aussie production, it's kind of interesting. And it is, you know, Aussie director, you know, the director of Wormwood, so I really wish they would have leaned more into their Ozploitation like roots, because then maybe the movie would have been a little bit more of a gore fest that we all wanted, and not a little bit less of a family drama. But you know, whatever. So I guess that's going to be your final spoiler warning, folks.
I did get a kick out of the senile grandma, where like sometimes she's cognitively there, and then other times she's not, but she's like still heartwarming and like
warm to the. I liked a lot of the characters in this movie. I thought the exterminator was funny. I thought the old lady, even the aunt, the bitch aunt, like she played her role very well. You know, she played the bitch aunt perfectly. I thought she was awesome, and she even had a cat that fucking looked like her, which I thought was funny. I don't know if that was intentional, but that was funny as hell. If there's nothing else to talk about, I guess we can go into, you know, what's not going to be a very long walkthrough. It's a giant spider movie. We all know where this movie's going. So, let's see. Our movie opens up with our senile old lady. Her name is Helga. We see her knitting at her chair in front of her television watching an old Universal horror movie. And she hears movement in her walls. It sounds like there's rats or even cats, like some animal running around the vents in her building. She ends up calling an exterminator, but we find out at this point that this woman has either dementia or Alzheimer's, something along those lines, because she has to read everything off a piece of paper that's on the wall. So when someone says, "Who's this?" there's a piece of paper on the wall that says, "My name is Helga." It, very Memento-like, if you guys remember Memento. And then she gives them the address, and then our exterminator shows up. When he shows up, he realizes that there's a truck from another extermination company outside the building. He's pissed off. He beeps at the intercom. She lets him in after a funny little exchange, because, again, this woman's senile, so, you know, she literally will forget stuff 30 seconds after you tell it to her, which is, you know, part of the comedy with this woman. Our exterminator goes up into the building. He notices that there's ooze coming out of some of the vents in the hallway. Eventually, he gets to Helga's apartment. He starts looking around her apartment, and he notices that there's a giant a hole near the floorboards of her apartment, and there's a blood trail going into the hole. So, of course, he turns on his flashlight, looks down there. Something ends up coming out of the hole, grabbing him and dragging him into the hole, and the camera fades to black. So that's our out-of-context cold open. And then the movie opens 4 days earlier. So 4 days before the events of the cold open, our movie begins, and what we see is a meteorite falling from space. Like, we can't tell how big it is, obviously, out of context. But when it finally hits the apartment building, we realize that it's a tiny little meteor, maybe the size of a golf ball. It crashes through a window and then lands in a dollhouse of all places. And as soon as the thing lands, it cracks open and out comes a little black spider. You know, kind of Black Widow looking. It looks like it has a red mark. Not the traditional red Black Widow mark on its belly, but it's got some kind of red mark on it. So this, of course, is... establishes that our giant spider is a fucking alien, folks. Yes, this is an alien giant spider movie. So up the ante a little bit, or at least I was hoping that they would up the ante, but they kind of didn't. So from there, we're introduced to Charlotte. We see that Charlotte is sneaking around the air vents. She ends up breaking into a storage apartment, like an apartment where they're just keeping stuff, and it is the room with the dollhouse where the meteor just landed. She goes up to the dollhouse. She takes a doll out of the house. She's going to take it. I guess she's stealing it and doing – we'll go over what she does with the dolls later. And then she sees the spider, and the spider is on her hand. Almost looks like it's about to bite her, the way it rears up its front legs and it almost like it extends its fangs. It looks like it's about to bite her, but then it doesn't. She ends up taking a matchbox and putting the spider in the matchbox. So, you know, this girl has no fear of spiders or insects in general, as we'll learn throughout the course of the film, and decides she wants to keep this cool-looking spider. She ends up going back to her room, through the vents, putting the spider in a jar, and, you know, the spider just kind of chills out in the jar for a little bit until it's feeding time. Now, as it turns out, this spider is a mimic in the sense that it can mimic sounds that it hears. So at one point, Charlotte gets a text on her phone, or she tweets. I think she tweets something, and it makes the you know, the little sound, the little two-tone sound. I can't whistle today. Sorry, folks. But suddenly she hears the spider make the same noise. So she decides, okay, that's going to be your dinner whistle. Whenever you're hungry, you just make that noise and I'll know it's feeding time. Somehow the spider understands her and actually makes that sound whenever it gets hungry throughout the movie. So for the first part of the movie, obviously the spider's living in a jar. Charlotte is feeding it roaches and whatever other insects that she can find in the building. They live in a slummy building, so roaches are not hard to find to feed the spider. And the spider is really interesting the way that it kills its food. Rather than jumping on it like a jumping spider or a trapdoor spider, it actually hangs out at the top of the jar, like in the lid, and then will shoot its web down and pull its victim up. Almost like the spider doesn't want to be seen eating, since he can actually hide up in the lid. He pulls his food up there and eats. And we see him do this a few times throughout the movie. You know, the spider is obviously not a normal spider, and it continues to make its little whistle when it's hungry. At this point, we're introduced to the rest of Charlotte's family, stepdad Ethan, mom Heather, and little brother, I forget what the baby's name was. I think it was William. But she has an infant little brother. Now, Ethan is a stepdad, so this is So Charlotte is not Ethan's daughter. Charlotte is Heather's daughter. And then Ethan and Heather also have a child themselves in the toddler, William. So it's a family of four. We find out that Ethan is a comic book artist, and he also has a day job where he's actually the superintendent of this building. There's a couple of funny interactions with the owner of the building, who is Heather's aunt, or Ethan's, I guess, aunt-in-law by marriage, where she's constantly yelling at him because, you know, she wants Ethan to be able to handle anything that the building needs, be it hot water heater repairs, insects, you know, fumigation, things like that. She just wants him to do it because she doesn't want to have to pay a professional to do it. Unfortunately, Ethan knows nothing about fumigation and things like that, so they do end up having to call Frank. That's his name. Frank is the funny exterminator in the film. So, throughout the film, obviously, we get just different problems with the family. The daughter, Charlotte, gives Ethan some ideas. As I mentioned, Ethan is a comic book artist. Charlotte is a wannabe or aspiring comic book artist. Like, that's what she wants to do. They show a quick scene where she gives him some suggestion on drawing eyes into, you know, behind a pair of glasses for a character in his book. This character is actually based on Charlotte's real father, who we never meet in the film. And she thinks very highly of her real dad, so she thinks highly of this character that is based on her father. She doesn't want him to have, like, glasses without eyes behind them, because you can't read emotion that way. She claims that it always makes them look like a villain when you can't see their eyes. Ethan disagrees. He basically lies to her and says, oh, I like that. That's kind of cool. And then as soon as she leaves the room, he literally erases it, which turns into an argument later on where Charlotte is like, if you don't like my ideas, don't lie to me and tell me that you do, blah, blah, blah. You know, like I said, the family drama back and forth. Okay, so at this point, the spider is still being fed. But now, one night, we see the jar, the lid of the jar, start to turn on its own. Yes, my friends, the spider has figured out how to take the lid off the jar and actually just starts walking around the building through the air ducts, as Don mentioned earlier, through the, you know, the heating and air ducts and grates and everything else. Eventually, it ends up attacking the bitch aunt's parrot. She has a parrot who's just as much of a bitch as the aunt is. We don't actually get to see the attack. We see the setup. Like, we see the parrot in the cage start freaking out. We see the legs of the spider start to poke out of the air vent next to the bird's cage. And then we just hear, like, you know, a commotion. You know, we hear a cage rattle and blah, blah, blah. And then we hear the aunt scream. And what we find is the fucking bird has been flayed. I mean, it's basically lost all its feathers, and part of its flesh has been melted off. For those of you who don't know, spiders and some other insects like flies will actually melt their food and suck up the juices. They don't actually like eat flesh per se. So, like I said, we see the bird, no feathers. It's pinned. It's funny because it's like pinned up in the cage like he was killed by Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers, where they set up the dead body to scare somebody later in the movie. It's kind of interesting. But yeah, they call in Frank once again, the exterminator, to try to figure out what's going on because now there's pets missing. You know, the parrot has been killed. There's a cat in the building that's missing, blah, blah, blah. We meet some other characters in the building as well. We meet Maria. She is just a single woman living on her own. It's alluded to that she lost her family. She ends up getting into a discussion with Ethan where she tells him, you know, always appreciate your kids because you never know that if they'll be here tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. She seems like a sweet, you know, nice older, not older as an old, but like maybe mid-40s, mid to late 40s, a fairly attractive Latina woman just living by herself with a chihuahua, with a yappy dog, because what's a single Mexican woman without a chihuahua? I don't know. So we also meet Eric. Eric is, I mentioned him earlier, he's like the animal expert in the building. Eric is a scientist who is actually doing work on the pancreases of fish. Basically, some breeds of fish have a way of regenerating pancreatic cells. His theory is that if he can harness that, that he might be able to eliminate all forms of pancreatic cancer if he can figure out how these fish regenerate pancreatic tissue. So, you know, that's kind of his experiment. At one point in the film, Charlotte brings the spider. Actually, before this, there was a cool, funny little scene that I think most of the young kids in the movie didn't catch. Before she actually names the spider, she's looking up at some of the books on her shelf, and she looks directly at The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. They're right next to each other. And then she goes, I know what I'm going to name you. Now, anybody who's ever read The Lord of the Rings books at this point is thinking, oh, she's going to name the spider Shelob, because Shelob is the queen of the spiders in the Lord of the Rings books. Instead, she goes, I'm going to call you Sting, which it actually got a chuckle out of me because it's a little bit of a misdirection, but I don't think anyone in the theater was old enough to have read a Lord of the Rings book, apparently, because no one else in the theater caught the joke. So I chuckled quietly to myself. Anyway, after naming the spider Sting, she goes to visit Eric, asking if she can buy a glass tank because Sting is now outgrowing his jar, which for some reason doesn't concern Charlotte. Literally, the spider, at one point she says the spider doubled in size in a few hours, and that didn't concern her. Like, nothing about her is, there's no bells going off, no red flags, no nothing. She just asks Eric if that's normal, and Eric is like, no, that's physiologically impossible. And she's like, well, this spider did it. And then eventually she's able to get the spider to feed in front of him. And then she's like, do you want to see what he looks like? She figures out a way to get the spider to come down from the lid. And the spider literally takes up like the entirety of the jar now at this point. The poor little guy is. But the thing is, as I mentioned earlier, he's leaving the jar every night. He's opening the lid, leaving to feed, and then coming back and closing the lid behind him. So it's a pretty fucking smart spider. So anyway, Eric basically tells her, I don't know what kind of species of spider this is. I'm going to need to study it a little bit so that I could give it the proper enclosure, because if I give it an enclosure that's either too big or too small, it could affect the psyche of the spider. This was probably a lie, because I'm sure Eric realized that was no earthly spider that he was looking at. So basically, he starts doing experiments on it and starts realizing, just like Charlotte, that every time he feeds it, it gets a little bigger. It somehow is getting bigger. So Eric is like, okay, I'm going to have to go to Charlotte's father, to Ethan, her stepfather. He calls Ethan down and says, and shows Ethan this spider and says, hey, man, I don't think your daughter should be keeping venomous spiders in your apartment. And he shows Ethan the spider. The spider falls from the jar lid after some electric current is placed on the lid. The spider falls into the jar. Ethan literally jumps out of his seat because this spider is like the size of a fist at this point. And he's freaking out. He goes to yell at Charlotte. Charlotte, of course, feels betrayed because she asked Eric not to say anything to Ethan, blah, 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 blah. She ends up going downstairs to Eric's apartment and knocking at the door, but Eric doesn't answer because obviously he knows, you know, he's in for a yelling session from this little girl who's going to yell at you for 10 minutes for giving away the spider or giving away the fact that the spider exists. At this point, Eric still has the spider. And at this point, he has it in a glass terrarium, and this fucking thing is the size of a dog at this point. It is fucking, I mean, maybe not a big dog, but like a small to medium-sized dog. Literally, he's got the thing in what looks like a 30 to 40-gallon tank, and it takes up the whole fucking tank. Literally, there's no room in the tank for this spider to move around. So eventually, it just smashes the fucking tank and just leaves. And like I said, at this point, you think that it would be all spider action. Nope. Back to the family where we have one final argument. And I've skipped a few of the arguments that this family's had, by the way, because they have too many. Like I said, a good 20 minutes of this movie is taken up with family drama. So basically what ends up happening is Charlotte is mad at Ethan, tells him you had no right to take Sting away from me, blah, blah, blah. And then she says, you know, my father wouldn't have taken Sting away from me because my father was awesome. And all throughout the movie, Ethan and the mom, Heather, were kind of alluding to some secret that they were keeping away from Charlotte about her dad. And this is the scene where finally the secret comes out. Charlotte talks about, my dad is awesome. He's so much better than you. You'll never be as cool as my dad. And then Ethan goes, well, why doesn't he ever visit you? And she goes, well, because he lives in Thailand. You know that. And then Ethan is like, no, he doesn't. He lives right across the bridge. He's 25 minutes away. And instantly you see the look on Charlotte's face change, the heartbreak show up, realizing that the dad that she's been looking up to, her cool, awesome dad, is actually a deadbeat scumbag who doesn't even want to visit her. Literally lied to her about being in Thailand so that he wouldn't have to visit her. So obviously she runs off to her room. Ethan and Heather get into an argument, which really pisses me off because Ethan is like the whipping boy in this movie, and in my opinion, poor Ethan has done nothing wrong. He's trying to work a day job as a superintendent. He's trying to continue his comic book career at night. He's trying to take care of a baby, a stepdaughter, on top of the fact that his wife is also a professional, so we see her kind of leave the house periodically. So Ethan has literally done nothing but try to do the best he can, and everybody shits on him in this movie, which is kind of fucking annoying to me. Literally, Heather calls him an asshole for what he did when it's fucking Heather's fault for not telling the truth to her daughter, perpetuating the lie that he's in Thailand just to save her fucking, psyche or feelings or whatever. So, yeah, this whole time I'm on Ethan's side. He's just a whipping boy for this movie. So, okay, at this point.
And let's not forget the fact that Charlotte hid the alien spider. She never told anyone about it, trying to keep it as a pet. That's my big issue with her.
Oh, yeah, she's got a lot of issues. It's funny because Charlotte actually has a lot of the worst personality traits of Chloe Grace Moretz in Kick-Ass, where she's always swearing, she has an authority complex, she doesn't listen to people, blah, 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 blah. Shit, she even looks a little bit like Chloe Grace Moretz in Kick-Ass, actually, now that I look at her. So, yeah, definitely Charlotte's not the most likable character. She plays her role well. She's just not written very well. You know, she's written kind of shallow. So anyway, at this point now, the spider starts attacking more and more people in the building. He eventually gets the bitch aunt's cat, and then the bitch aunt goes looking for the cat. Because the spider is a mimic, he's able to make cat noises himself to attract this woman to get into the vent. She gets into the vent. Of course, we see the spider drag her off, and bitch aunt is now gone. and so what happens is, once again, Ethan and Heather are again having an argument, having a discussion. They end up sending Charlotte. Oh, no, that's what happens. Ethan ends up losing his temper and punching their television, smashing it completely. Mom, Heather, sends Charlotte to her room. She tells her to take William, her little brother, with her so that they can have a discussion, you know, and then obviously the parents have their little discussion about watching his temper, and she doesn't want to have to deal with this again. So apparently her first husband was kind of violent too. Not that Ethan's violent. Ethan's violent to inanimate objects. He beats up a water heater and he beats up a television. I mean, at least he's not beating up his kids, you know, that's fucking admirable at least. So unfortunately, when Heather sends Charlotte to her room, Charlotte puts headphones on so she can't hear. She's obviously trying to drown out the argument. Unfortunately, as soon as Charlotte leaves the room, Sting makes an appearance. Mom looks up to the ceiling slowly, and there's Sting up on the ceiling. Sting drops down on Ethan, bites him. If you guys, for those who, I think I mentioned it already, spiders tend to paralyze their food first, cocoon it, take it to their lair, and then eat it later. So the spider bites Ethan, paralyzing him. He starts drooling, you know, like he's basically on like meth or something. The spider eventually attacks the mom as well and literally drags the mom out of the living room. This whole time, Charlotte has headphones on, so she's not hearing anything that's going on in the living room. Finally, she looks up and she sees the dog barking, and the dog is actually Maria's dog. I completely skipped Maria's death scene, but it's potentially the best death scene in the movie, so I'm going to leave that for you guys to watch if you haven't seen it already. If you've already seen it, then you know how cool a scene it was, so I'll leave that one alone. It sucks, too, because Maria is one of the more likable characters in the movie, but she gets the most brutal death scene in the film, too. It should have been the aunt. It should have been the bitch aunt that had the brutal death scene, but unfortunately, it's the nice person, so there you go. So anyway, after Maria is killed, her dog, Bonnie, ends up staying with Ethan and Heather and the family. After Ethan and Heather are attacked by the spider, Charlotte looks up. While still wearing headphones, she sees that Bonnie, the chihuahua, is barking at something. She doesn't know what. She thinks that he's hungry and that he wants food. So she actually gets up with the headphones still on, walks into the living room, doesn't notice that Ethan is laying right behind her on the ground being dragged away by the spider, because like I said, she's got her headphones on, and she's watching a video on her phone. So she's literally not looking or listening to anything in her surrounding area. She ends up grabbing food for Bonnie, giving the dog some food, and then going back to watch her little brother. She looks up again, and the dog is still barking. Bonnie's still barking at the same thing, even though there's a full plate of food in front of her. So finally, Charlotte gets up, takes her headphones off, and starts looking around, realizes that her parents are both gone, and the living room is in shambles. Like, the furniture is all knocked over, broken table, shit like that. She sees that the grating on the vent has been ripped off. So she goes up to the vent and instantly starts calling out Sting. At this point, she hasn't seen that Sting is the size of a dog. She still thinks that Sting is like, you know, normal spider size. And she can't find anything. She's calling down. She's calling for Ethan. She's calling for her mother, for Sting. Nobody's answering. Finally, she goes back to the bedroom where little baby William was in his crib. And now William's gone. He's completely gone, and now Charlotte's like, what the fuck is going on? Now, I actually skipped one important plot point earlier. Earlier in the film, we see that the senile grandmother, Heather's mother and Charlotte's grandmother, has mothballs all over her house, and all her clothes smell like mothballs, you know, the traditional old person smell from like the 70s or 80s. And at one point, while she's about to feed Sting, while Sting is still little, one of the mothballs falls out of like her book bag or her pocket or something and rolls towards the jar, and suddenly you can hear Sting screaming, like yelling, you know, not human yells, but like, you know, a little spider yelling. She takes the mothball away, and the jar settles, like the spider stops shaking and freaking out. She ends up realizing that it's a mothball. She takes the mothball and actually touches it to a piece of Sting's webbing that's sticking out of the jar, and instantly the mothball dissolves the web. And at the same time that she does that, Sting reacts inside the jar. Like he knows that his web is being touched by whatever that material is, that mothball material. So at this point, in the film, you know, we're back to the third act where parents are missing, William is missing, she's by herself, and she remembers the mothball thing. So she literally grabs a box of mothballs that she's got in her house. She puts them in I forget what those things are called. She grinds them up in like a grinding cup. She grinds them up into a powder, and then she puts it in a bottle of water and mixes it up, a big bottle of water. Mixes it up, and then she fills up a super soaker with it, one of those big-ass, awesome super soakers. She tapes a flashlight to it, very Rambo-style, cocks the gun, and goes to work. And literally, she jumps into the vents. She starts spraying bits of the vent, because obviously it'll keep Sting away from any area that has this water touching it. And every time she sprays the stuff, it dissolves whatever spider webs are in the ducts. She's traveling through the ducts. She ends up finding the bitch aunt's cat, and he's literally strung up on a fucking web and all torn to shit. Not quite as bad as the parrot looked earlier. Yeah, this movie is definitely not good for pet lovers. If you're a pet lover, you might want to think about seeing this movie. Maybe passing on it. Luckily, though, we don't actually have to see any of the pet deaths. They're all done off screen. Not like Itsy Bitsy, where we actually see that spider attack the cat and kill it, you know, on screen. So that was a little bit more hardcore. This one's not as bad, but you're getting a lot more after effects here. Anyway, so she finds the cat hung up on the web. She continues going through the air duct system. The air duct system eventually, like, connects to like the garbage disposal, the shaft, like the garbage shaft, where, you know, people who live in apartment buildings will put their bags of garbage in, and it goes down to the basement to a dumpster. She ends up finding Ethan there, webbed up against the wall. Now, Ethan obviously is paralyzed, so he's weak. He is awake, thankfully, but he's still very weak and can't really move. Charlotte lets him know, I've got mothball water in this gun. It dissolves Sting's webs, and it actually hurts him as well, so we've got a way to defend ourselves. She lets him know that she's going to take the webs off of him and that he needs to try to hold on so that they don't fall all the way down to the garbage chute or down to the garbage dumpster. She ends up freeing his webs. He's able to hold on for a little bit, but then Sting shows up right above them. Sting drops down, freaks out both Ethan and Charlotte, and they end up both falling down to the dumpster down in the basement. It's like a garbage room / laundry room type area, you know, kind of a cellar apartment building type area. When they get down there, they realize that Mom and William are webbed up inside of the trash compactor. There is a trash compactor in here that's alluded to earlier in the film, so it's very obviously foreshadowing something that's going to happen later, because we actually get to see Ethan using the garbage disposal, and the fact that its electrical connection isn't very tight and has to be tightened manually before you can turn it on, so obviously foreshadowing for later. As they're getting Mom and William off of the web, Frank, the exterminator, ends up falling down. And this is where it connects back to the cold open. At this point, it's now been 4 days. We're now back to the scenes of the cold open. You remember Frank was dragged into the hole, and then the cold open faded to black. Well, this is the continuation of that scene. He falls down to the garbage dumpster. Just like where everybody else is, and realizes that everybody else is down there. And Frank gets pissed for some reason. Oh, right, because the doors are locked. For some reason, the doors in this room are locked from the outside. Now, don't forget, they didn't come in here through the door. They fell through the chute. So why would they have their keys with them to get out of the room, you know? Frank gets really mad when he realizes that they're locked in, and Ethan, the superintendent, doesn't have his keys with him to open the door and get out. So he actually physically gets all up in Ethan's face, starts, you know, grabbing his shirt, pinning him against the wall, and Ethan's like, whoa, 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 stop, don't spill this, I can't spill this. And then, you know, Frank is like, well, what is it? And Ethan tells him, or should I say Charlotte tells him, it's mothball water. It hurts Sting, and it dissolves their webs. While Frank, the fucking, you know, self-entitled douchebag that he is, grabs the bottle of water. Mind you, it's the last bottle of water left. At this point, the gun is empty, and all of the little small water bottle grenades that she made are all gone. This is literally the last one. Frank swipes it from Ethan and just starts pouring it all over himself. And they're like, what the fuck are you doing? That's our last one. Don't waste it. Frank, of course, like I said, he's a selfish prick, just telling them to fuck off. I'm not going to die because of you. I don't know why he would even make that statement. Like, it's Ethan's fucking fault that there's a giant spider in the building. But eventually we hear the spider in the vents. We hear the spider start to come down the vents, down the garbage chute and into that room. Frank, the exterminator, has a nail gun with him that he uses for protection. Why an exterminator needs a nail gun is beyond me, but, you know, he kind of implies that it's for protection, so he doesn't have to carry a real gun with him. He ends up shooting at the vents and ends up hitting the spider to the point where we actually see blue. We actually see blue blood oozing out of the vent through one of the nail holes that Frank just shot. And then Frank kind of does his best Arnold impersonation when he says, oh, it can bleed. That means we can kill it. And then the instant Frank says, if it bleeds, we can kill it, a spider web shoots out, grabs him from the vent. It pulls him up to the vent, pulls him up into the vent head first, and then there's just an explosion of blood. So for the first time, Sting actually kills someone with the intention of killing them, not feeding on them later. So I don't know. I mean, we don't actually get to see if he, like, ripped Frank's head off or whatever, but literally just an explosion of blood. Frank's body falls back to the floor, and then Sting falls down into the floor, into the basement with them, with the whole family at this point. They all end up piling into the garbage disposal. The garbage compactor. It's a compactor, not a disposal. They all pile into the garbage disposal compactor, and they're trying to set up Sting. They're trying to get Sting to come in through the entrance so that they can, you know, drop the compactor on him and crush him. So, you know, Charlotte actually makes the noise. She's like, come on, Sting, come and get your food. And Sting hears her and starts to go into the trash compactor. At the moment that Sting is directly under the compactor, Ethan hits the button and it doesn't work. Nothing happens. Remember earlier we established that the power cable connected to this thing tends to get disconnected. And that's exactly what happened. The camera pans over to the cable. We see that it's slightly disconnected. Luckily, Ethan, who is inside of the trash compactor, realizes that cable connection is right outside of the part of the compactor that they're in. So he elbows, the wall until he has a big enough hole that he could stick his hand through and attach, you know, the electrical cable. And, of course, we get the tense moment where Ethan is reaching for the cable, trying to grab it, Sting at the same time is slowly approaching his family. Finally, Ethan is able to connect the cable, and it instantly electrocutes him. He goes flying across the compactor. But the compactor is on now, so Charlotte ends up hitting the button and squish. Giant spider goes squish. The compactor comes down, and it's almost kind of, I don't know if they were trying to make it sad, it's kind of sad/funny that as Sting is dying, he makes a baby sound. He makes like a baby crying sound, like he's mimicking William, because William's the only baby in this building. So literally, as he's dying, he makes a crying baby sound, almost like he's looking for sympathy. At this point, the family gets out of the trash compactor, but Ethan is out cold with his eyes open. He's electrocuted. Literally looks like he's going to die. Heather starts giving him mouth-to-mouth. Charlotte starts to kind of think about a scene from one of her comic books that she had written where kind of the same thing had happened, where a character seemed to be dead, and then Charlotte, or in the comic book she's known as Fang Girl, Fangirl closes her eyes and counts to three, and when she wakes up, the character is alive again. Well, they emulate that same thing in the film at the end. It's kind of hokey. It's very hokey, actually, I should say, because literally she closes her eyes, counts to three, and when she opens them, Ethan starts breathing again, and everybody's happy. The whole family is alive, and they start to pile out of the trash compactor. But then we get the final sting, no pun intended, of the film. And as I mentioned earlier, folks, it's the same fucking final sting that we get in every goddamn giant spider or spider colony movie or whatever you want to go with. And that is, of course, a clutch of spider eggs. The camera pans behind the trash compactor and shows about a half dozen alien spider eggs, and literally one of them starts to open. We see a single spider leg poke out and fade to black, and that's our movie, folks. That is Sting 2024. Now, obviously, I skipped a bunch of scenes. I skipped some kills. I obviously skipped a bunch of the family drama, because if I thought the family drama is boring in the movie, it's going to be even more boring sitting here, me, you know, listening to me talk about it. So I skipped a lot of that shit. But yeah, 91-minute film. It does go by. It goes by fairly quick if you can handle the family drama stuff. If the family drama stuff is going to rub you the wrong way and just bring the film to a halt, then the movie's going to feel like it's 2.5 hours long, even though it's only 90 minutes. So go into it, you know, with a grain of salt. Yes, there's a good spider in here, some decent kills, definitely a lack of them, unfortunately. And then you're going to have to deal with, like I said, about 15 to 20 minutes of family drama taking up, you know, that much of your 90-minute movie. So just be warned. But otherwise, I would still give it a mild recommend, mainly if you're a big creature feature guy like myself. Because it is worth seeing Sting the Spider. Maybe not Sting the movie so much, but Sting the Spider is still something to behold. He's still pretty cool looking. As he gets bigger, his face starts to mutate. It almost starts to look like he has a mouth and eyes and shit. It's kind of cool. You know, it is an alien spider, so I wouldn't expect it to look like an earthly spider. It still mostly does, but like I said, the face definitely gets pretty mutated as it gets bigger. So, like I said, mildly fun movie. Not the best creature feature we're likely gonna get this year. Might not even be the best creature feature I've watched this month, considering some of the other ones that I've watched in preparation for this movie. But yeah, like I said, if you're a fan of stuff like Eight-Legged Freaks, Itsy Bitsy, Lavalantula, Big Ass Spider, Arachnid, Arachnia, then I would say this one is still worth watching. It may not hit the heights of some of those movies, but I still would say it's worth giving it a shot. But like Don said, I would wait for streaming. No need to pay $20 to see this in theaters, other than if you want to support the subgenre, which I absolutely do. You know, if a giant spider movie is playing theaters, you can pretty much bet your house that I'm going to be there. So, and that'll continue to happen no matter how bad these creature features end up being. I will be there every time. So that's it from me, folks. Back to Mike to finish us off.
Yeah, I would give kind of like the same recommend. Like, there's enough in the movie to still kind of give it a mild recommend. Just kind of understand this isn't going to be your crazy over-the-top killer monster or creature movie. So, yeah, with that said, I think that's going to wrap up the episode on Sting. But let's go around the cast to find out where else we've been recording podcasts, if anywhere. So, Venom, yeah. What you got?
Well, it's only been 2 days since the last time we saw each other, so nothing new. Pretty much the same stuff I went over last episode. Creature Comforts episode 25, where we look at Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, is available now, so check that episode out. Latest episode of the Crystal Lake Gift Shop is episode 4. That's probably like a month and a half old now. We are planning on doing the next episode of the Crystal Lake Gift Shop, which will cover the Halloween episode from season 1 of Friday the 13th, the series. So that should be fun. I do remember really liking the Halloween episode. So let's see if my memories serve me well. The main show, we still have not gotten together to record my picks, my bloody picks that I'm bringing to the next main show. So Hopefully that gets recorded sooner than later. But the last episode, I believe episode 58, is still available. And those are Mike's picks where we looked at a pair of William Castle films. And let's see. And then as far as guest spots go, like I said last week, I did a YouTube appearance on Sledgehammer Horror for their Would You Rather live event. That video is still available on their Sledgehammer YouTube channel. It's over 3 hours long, so if you just want to watch my segment, I would fast forward to like the 1 hour and 15 minute mark of the video, and my segment will be right around that part. So check that out. And then the only other guest spot I have to talk about is, of course, Cut to the Chase, where we looked at the Omen franchise. And that episode is definitely available now. I saw the link for it posted a couple of days ago, so check out that episode. Yes, we look at the entire Omen franchise, all six movies. It is a long show, so prepare, make a drink, make a sandwich, sit down and listen to our thoughts on the Omen franchise, which will double up on our review of the first Omen, because we talked about the first Omen on this show last week, and then we end the Omen franchise retrospective with the first Omen as well, so kind of double reviews for that one. And that's pretty much it from me, folks. Just getting back into the swing of things of podcasting in a timely manner. I just got to, you know, keep Mike on the ball, and we'll get a nice flow of episodes coming for the rest of the year. So look out for those.
All right, I'll kick it over to Don. What do you got?
Yeah, not much. Creature Comforts is available. Guestbot is coming up soon on No Bodies podcast, which is a look at religious horror, which was a lot of fun. The only other new thing is this is the, like I said, I'm going bi-weekly now for the rest of the season, so this is the release week of the Horror Countdown. Kind of an unusual episode. Basically, I improvised the episode on the spot. The guests on the show didn't do their homework and provided a top 10 list. So instead, I decided to turn it into a behind-the-scenes interview of their film Death Metal, which came out last year, I think, or year before, I'm not sure. But, I had the director of the film on. We were supposed to do a list on heavy metal horror, but apparently he forgot. So I just winged it and turned it into a behind-the-scenes. Got to, talk about some of the shooting, some of the struggles of getting it made. And to keep it on theme, at the very end, I did a top 10 list of my personal heavy metal horror films. So kind of an unusual one, but that's the reason why. So that is the latest episode available now. And you have to wait for the releases to come out. But I guess that's pretty much it for me.
Okay, so for what I got, Fresh Cuts, obviously, but then I also did end up doing a guest spot on 22 Shots, just recorded the day before recording this. It was in their urban horror episode where it was Death by Temptation, what else, Snoop Dogg's Hood of Horrors, and Bones, as in Jimmy Bones, also Snoop Dogg movie. Yeah, it's funny because I originally wanted to do their Shaw Brothers horror movie, but
nice of them to fight the way they know to talk about black horror movies.
Yeah. So that episode, they're pretty much clockwork, like with releasing their episodes. So since they recorded yesterday, it should be out at the end of this week. I think they release it like a day early for their patrons, and it'll be up everywhere on Friday. So if you're listening to this, it should be released the same week. Other than that, that's all I really got for now. Got a couple things in the works, but a little too early to announce those. And our next episode, I'm assuming, is going to be on Abigail, right? That little girl vampire movie.
Oh, spoiler!
It's in the trailers, Mike.
I know, which I didn't see. I kind of already knew what it was, even just based on the poster. But yeah, I don't know. That's definitely a trailer. I'm glad I didn't watch. I feel like
it's one of those. It looks like
It looks like it's supposed to be a spoiler to the characters, but not to the audience.
I gotcha. All right. Well, yeah.
That's kind of the vibe I'm getting, but I think this the gist is that it's supposed to be a surprise to the characters, but we'll see.
Yeah, from what I saw, it's kind of hard for the audience not to realize it. But hey, well, yeah, we'll see how they craft it. But anyways, yeah, that's what's coming out in theaters this coming up week or weekend. So that will likely be the next episode of Rush Cuts. But with that said, thank you everybody for listening. We will be back in about a week. And let's say bye to our listeners.
Later.
If you whistle at a spider and it whistles back, kill it. Kill it with fire. Now. That is all.
Not CGI fire either, because we've had some bad experiences with CGI fire in movies lately.